1920, you're telling me that your armoured car and crew had been captured. What happened to them eventually? Did you get them back?
No, no. No, they were taken prisoner. And we heard later that they were prisoners of war. But there was nothing we could have done because the enemy advanced so quickly at that stage. And at that stage, I think they had won the battle. We had realised that we'd lost so many tanks. I think at that stage, about 200 in a day had been lost by when they advanced. They had hidden 88mm guns, which picked them off. I think they lost somewhere around about 200 in a day, which was, you know.
So our tanks were hit by the German anti-tank artillery as they were advancing.
They just picked them off, apparently, which I haven't read. There is an official thing about that particular battle which will tell you more about the number that they lost at that stage. And a lot of the boxers have been overwhelmed by sheer weight of force and
numbers.
And they were good in their place as long as they all held, but as they were rolled up, you know, but Bir Hakeim held on for a long time until they were told eventually
to withdraw.
And they did that overnight, which was good. I remember at this stage, I think we were all very, very depressed. And I was sitting on the edge of a slope with a wadi just below us. And the wadi was a wide one, just like a parade ground, with a sloping side. And it was almost dusk. And I was sitting there with a squad leader on the ground, sort of just, you know, hands on a chin, just looking pretty fed up, thinking, well, this is, you know, the worst. And coming from our right, we saw 50 tanks coming along, just like on a parade ground. Fantastic, 50 tanks, you know, which, and our spirits just soared. And as they came along below us, you know, and it was just as though it was a King's birthday parade or something, you know, they came by. And squad leader said to me, "Do you notice anything?" I said, "No, what?" He said, "Something very odd." He said, "There's no rattle of tank tracks. There's not great big dust clouds. And there's no this blue smoke coming up." And then we realized they were all dummies. They were one-ton trucks with camouflaged to look like tanks with a gun on the front. And these all came along.
So decoys.
Decoys, and they were manned by the blues, the lifeguards, or I think it was the blues. The blues. And what they did, we saw them later, dotted along at intervals of about 200 or 300 yards on a long ridge, up so they could be seen as tanks, and that's all they were, with a driver, one-ton drive truck. But yeah, of course our spirits went like that again. But I suppose they did serve a purpose.
Well, it seemed that either of bamboozled the Germans into
delaying a bit.
That's right. Drawn
that's right. Or slowed them down a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always a place for deception, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Well, we'll see that later on, actually. But I must say, it was quite a depressing thing when we realised what they were. Oh, when they went by, oh, a couple of hundred yards. Oh, well, it might have been a bit more, say, because we were up on a slope and they were over. Say, 500-600 yards, perhaps, you know. It's, I can't move it off. But clear enough to see them. And they looked good, apart from the sound. And
yes,
but that, of course, that didn't register particularly at the time. You know, it wasn't until one started to think and then
realised
they couldn't be real because there was no rattle because a tank going, 50 tanks going along, they make a bit of a rattling noise with their tracks. And
what about your older cars when they were motoring? Did they make a noise at all?
No, no, apart from the dust. They weren't too bad at all. Probably like a sound of a lorry, perhaps.
Yes.
Not quite so much as that, perhaps. You know, they're quite. That was the horse guards who did that.
The horse guards.
Mm. Oh, and that that day, there was a big. The headquarters was that's right, to the north of us, about 10 miles. Brigade HQ, and it was a dark night, and the squad leader sent me to Brigade HQ to collect some operational orders. So, and it was due north of, say, I think about 10 miles, something like that. So I said, right, so I got in my armoured car, you see, and I thought, right, I didn't get the compass out. I looked at the North Star, and off I went following the North Star. I told my driver, 10 miles, or let me know when you're about 10 miles. And eventually, we finished up in Brigade HQ, which I thought was, I was quite pleased, you see. And went in, I think they had one of these caravan type things, and got my orders. And jumped back in the armoured car and said to the driver, right, looked up at the stars, turn, kept turning, right, go straight. So off he went, and I went for about 6 miles. I thought, well, no, we were going over dips and trenches, and I saw a tank knocked out with some bodies laying at the side. I thought, I can't remember this, you know, we shouldn't be in here, you know. And so I stopped and I looked up at my, because I turned so my back was to the North Star.
Yes.
You see? But what I'd done, I know if you know the stars at all, but there is the plough and the North Star, and there's something which is not, I mean, you shouldn't be confused with it, but a little plough sort of thing with a star above it, which I, sort of in my haste, I looked up and said, oh, there's the North Star, turned, and I was going with my back to that. And of course, then I realised it wasn't the North Star. I was going
at
the wrong angle altogether, you see. So I said, oh, stop, stop. Turn round, got onto this star again. Keep going. And I was back. We'd done about 6 miles, I think. Come on, back you go. Until I got back into Brigade HQ again. And said, right, now let's start again. Looked up, made sure I'd got the North Star behind me this time. And came back the 10 mile again. But I think, you see, there's another case too of being a little bit overtired and getting a little bit careless,
right,
which took me in a completely different direction to what I should have done.
Easily done.
Yeah. I could have done it with a compass, but when you take the compass out, you've got to get it out of the car and line up the car because of the steel.
Yes, right.
So, as I say, this was the simplest and a good way, really, providing you knew your stars.
But were you still on detached duty at this stage?
Yes.
Still one squadron?
Still one squadron.
Attached to the armoured brigade?
That's right, yes. So, these were sort of the jobs I was given, you see. You said what sort of. That's right, what sort of jobs you get.
This was, by this time, you were sort of well to the east of the Gazala line.
Yes, yeah. We were dropping back then. I think they'd realised that the battle was almost not lost. think on the was on the 4th of June, it was really red hot. We were in the area. I was saying about the barrels being there to as a marker, as a point, and we had got to a barrel 702, which was one of the things. I didn't know exactly where it was, somewhere in the Knightsbridge area, I think, but that was 702. And we were gradually dropping back, and we were then given the task to watch the southern flank of 7th Army Division, which were, I think, probably down in the south, and we were watching to the south of that, and that was our task. And the Stukas were still coming over then. And on the 6th of June, in the Al Adam area, which was the airport airfield there.
This is in Libya, isn't it?
Yeah. And they had about 100 tanks, and they were moved then up to the Akroma area, trying to sort of stem the tide a little bit. I don't think they had a lot of luck with that.
You mentioned that when you went to brigade headquarters, they had a caravan.
Yeah.
What was that like?
One of those armoured caravan things, you know.
Armoured caravan?
Yeah, one of those 3-ton truck things, which were made up into an armoured sort of box in the back.
What was inside this box?
Maps, map boards, you know, and all that sort of thing. It was like an office with all the maps on it. And as I say, it served then, and they had the radios in there, of course, and so they could operate from that and get the whole battle. And I think the divisional ones had them. You know, I think there was probably 2 or 3 in each divisional headquarters.
Was this brigade main headquarters then?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, it was the main headquarters. Mm. Which they always went back to anyway. The TAC one was not. It was just a place where the regiment, they had a TAC headquarters with the colonel in the jeep to get nearer and get, but he always had to go back to his main headquarters to get the big picture on the map and that sort of thing. Around about the time of 7th Armoured Div, I got involved with about 100 tanks, and they were fighting in the whole area of Akroma.
Are these the tanks you've seen at Ella Down?
That's right, yes, with 7th Armoured. But then soon, there were tanks burning everywhere again. They went on to the 88 millimeters. I mean, they had, I think, a large number of these 88, and they could take on our tanks from way back, and they were so accurate. You know, they could just pick them off like a fairground. They were a fantastic gun.
What were you doing for some armored division then? Were you screening for them or what?
Just screening, that's all. But, I mean, there's not a lot you could do, because you were up with them, you were more or less going forward with them, because there was nothing you could see, because in front of you were your own tanks or enemy tanks, depending on how your luck went, because that was everything was so close. See, and I think too, the 88 used to pick off the tanks before they pick off an armored car, because they took off the prime target with a big gun.
What did you do though?
Well, depend on what was happening at the time. You'd try to get out of the way, or try to get some cover, or whatever.
Was there any cover to be had?
Well, not really. There might have been a little bit of a dip or something, but nothing that you could speak of. It'd be nice to have got behind a wall or something, but there
weren't any.
No.
What about the 88? were they behind cover?
Oh, they were dug in. Mm. They were well dug in, and as I say, they could the guns almost level with the ground. So the barrels would be level with the ground. And of course, when they fired, it was a direct shot. That's right. So, and the speed they used to come, I mean, it's just like an express train coming through. And when you heard that go by, my word, it made you gulp. And then if that missed you, and you should see the furrow that plant, you know, made in the sand as it went by. All from the shot itself.
From the shot itself.
Yeah, it's got so low, and it'd come and it hit the ground, and it'd go along, and it'd furrow. Because I got in the way of some of them. I think they might have been overshots. I don't think they were firing at me, but I know I saw two or three of them come zoom by, you know. And I didn't think they were coming for me. I think they were overshots from firing at tanks or something. Right. I think so.
I'm not quite sure what you could be doing if you were global screening, and yet you were occasions you were travelling behind your own.
Think that was such a mix-up that you went along. Mm. You might have been your task was to do this, but then you were overtaken by. You see, so then you just that's right, and so you'd be going along, seeing if there's anything you could do.
Oh.
I think you know once. You started off with your task, and then the tanks would then overtake you because of the push from behind to say, and there was no further that we could go.
Yes, because you were running into heavier.
That's right. You see, so we got then mixed up, sort of behind the tanks or with the tanks, and there was nothing much we could do apart from perhaps pick up someone who had been knocked out or. Things like that, but there was nothing really that we could do. We'd have been better, I think, got out of it.
Well, I was about to say, judging from what you've been saying earlier, the best thing you could do if heavier vehicles started mixing it was to get back out of the way.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You couldn't contribute much to a
no.
heavy firefight, and
no.
you were vulnerable.
That's right, area. Yeah. I think that's what did happen in the end. We got as much as we could in our particular task. Yeah, and then until we say, oh, well, let's, until you got the order to go back, get out of it, you sort of hang around.
Mm. What's the formation were our tanks in for that advance?
I think same as normal, more or less in troops.
Yes.
You know, with either two up or one back, you know, each giving support, and the whole squadron would be going forward like that, or three squadrons or two squadrons, depending on the strength of the sort of fire and movement sort of thing.
And what sort of tanks were they?
They had Grants, I think it was the Grants, and the Honey tanks. They had a mixture. But I think most of the ones up there, they were Grants, which had the, they had the 75mm on, didn't they?
75 and a sponson.
And a 37, didn't they?
In a little turret.
That's right, yeah. And the Grant only had a very wide,
limited traverse,
yeah, about 15 degrees, I think, if
yeah.
I remember rightly, on the side.
That's right.
Mm. So, again, that was quite... They were quite limited, really. They, when they were going forward, if they were attacked from the flank, to use that gun, they had to turn the whole tank, you know, which is a bit of a...
Time,
it does, and also, while you have time, you've been... And with an 88, you don't have time.
What sort of speed were they going at during this advance?
Job to tell, really. I think, according to what the opposition was, I think in some cases they'd go fast until they met opposition, and then they'd slow down a bit until they could sort of get into firing positions and things like that. It was a matter of according to what the terrain was like and the opposition was like.
Were they doing any firing on the move, or were they stopping to shoot?
They're mainly stopping to shoot. I don't know how accurate the Grant would have been on the move. But I think it was a case of stopping, firing, and then on again.
So I remember the 75 they carried was 5HE, but not really armour piercing.
Yes, I think it was HE, but the 37mm
was
armoured piercing. But,
I suppose the HE could have been effective against anti-tank guns.
Oh yes, or infantry, that sort of thing. If, and I think too, if they, as you saw them when they advanced, and you'd see shells dropping ahead of them,
yeah,
you know, which probably helped until they got close enough to use an AP if there was a tank.
Mm.
But I didn't sort of study much the tank tactics. Really, but although it's general, you knew
yeah.
roughly what they were doing. But it was always, I think, a squadron and each troop as a either two up and one back giving support or the other way around.
Did you see any German tanks during this fighting?
Only knocked out ones mm-hmm. and probably in the far distance, but not close enough to. Do it, well, we couldn't do anything with them anyway, but...
what you've been saying so far, it seems the main business was being done by the German anti-tank gunners rather than...
They still had their tanks with them.
They
I think the tanks, though, were back a bit,
yeah.
ready to support the...
They
set the 88mm up as a trap
yeah.
for our tanks to go on to.
Do you mean like an ambush?
An ambush, or... Us sort of think now we're on our way, we're winning. Lured onto the tank, the 88 by the tanks that were either probably withdrawing or you knew were in that area. And of course, once they moved onto them, the 88 would then come into action, knock them all out, and then the tanks could come forward. I think it was a good bit of strategy that did it. And I think you'll find if you read out that. They lured our tanks onto the 88mm.
Sounds like a very cunning plan.
Yeah.
Was this the biggest action you've been involved in to date?
This was.
Yes.
To see so much shooting, destruction of tanks, and death, that was the biggest action because you were right in the middle of it and there was dead everywhere, tanks burning everywhere. It was just hell. And if you were in the middle of it and smoke, burning, smell, it was there for a week, near enough. It was horrendous because before we'd been individuals, we'd been, free. We could get out anywhere and do whatever, but not there. You were. That's why I think tank regiment, they really used to get the stick. They were in there to fight. They went forward and they were being shot at and they still had to keep going. Whereas we, all we wanted to do was get information and get the hell out of it. But the tanks really had to stay there to be killed.
They sog it up.
They did, and you've got to admire them for it. I should hate to have been a tank man. So I say again what you've been trained to do. And it wouldn't have been so bad had we had the same equipment as the Germans had. But our tanks were so outgunned, especially in the little honeys, they had a 800-yard disadvantage. They were being shot at by their big guns. And they had to get in under cover of smoke a further 800 yards in to be effective.
That is a great disadvantage.
It was, but it was the same all through the war. This went on on the 9th of June, A squadron came up and relieved us of our job.
So they'd come
from Cairo.
Yes.
Having refitted and everything refreshed, and they came up to relieve us.
What happened to you? What did you do?
Then we we headed back towards Cairo, and I was navigating on the way back, which was great.
Was this for the whole squadron?
Yeah, yeah, an A squadron on its way up.
What was the squadron strength when you went back with them?
We hadn't lost the number of armoured cars. I think probably might have lost three or four or something like that, but we were still nothing to what we were in the first sort of business. And now this was what, the
9th
of June.
9th of June.
So we've been up since May, haven't we?
Yes.
7th of May. So we've been up a month.
Yes.
And so we'd and been in quite a bit in that time, been in the thick of it. But fortunately, we hadn't lost many armoured cars.
It sounds as though they were trying to establish a system of rotation in and out of action too.
Well, not that so much. I think we happened to, they probably wasn't room for a whole regiment up there then.
Yeah.
And so a squadron, while the others had to go back, refit, get sorted out, and give the chaps a spot of leave, because a lot of us had been up on the desert now 6 months without any leave or anything, probably hadn't seen a house, certainly hadn't seen any women, you know, and had no pleasures or anything like that for 6 months, you know, so they probably thought it was about time some of us had
a rest.
So we were going back, and we were on our way. We went on the 9th of June. Yeah. Well, it's over 7 months now.
Yes.
We hadn't stepped in a bed or anything for 7 months. I'd been to the side of the armoured car all the time. So we were delighted to be on our way, and each day we got down to Bardia. We went on the coast road down to Saloum and had a swim, so we were quite good. And as I say, we were looking forward to a holiday in Cairo. On the way down, just near Sloom or one of those places, we met B Squadron coming up. They'd come from Cairo, fit, refreshed, ready to go straight into battle. And we passed them, we stopped, and you know, and we sort of asked them what it was like and all that sort of thing. And we say, right, we got asked to come, we're looking forward to it. And the squadron leader of B Squadron, he said, right, to me this was, right, there's your armour car, put your kit on it. So I said, I beg your pardon, sir. He said, you're coming back to B Squadron. So, you know, it knocked me for six. So I said, oh, I said, 7 months I've been up on the desert. I haven't had a day off. You know, I haven't had a rest, this, that, you know. Can't I go back for some leave? He said, well, I want you with me. So I said, well, you know, can't I have 4 days at least leave to go back and sort of get civilized? And he said, all right, 4 days. And then I want you to join me back, find me in the desert somewhere, and join me.
Didn't C Squadron Command have something to say about?
Well, I suppose that had been agreed with the squad, with the. He obviously spoke to C Squadron leader before he spoke to me. On the way up, we'd stopped and we were there for about an hour talking to each other, you see, and whatnot. And that was just before we were due to move off. He had obviously spoken to C Squadron leader, who would have probably had been agreed by the colonel, you know, that I go back to B Squadron, which I've been in ever since I joined the regiment. And the C Squadron leader must have said, all right, well, I'll have whoever it was. But I don't know what. But it had obviously been agreed. So
but you were still a WO2.
I was still a WO2, yeah, and they want me back.
Squadron Sergeant Major.
Yeah, B Squadron is supposed to see. No loss of rank or anything, it was just